Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, it's me, Sam Baker. And before we go on with the show, I want to tell you about an exciting new initiative coming from The Shift. Many of you have asked how you can support the podcast further and get more Shift into the bargain. Well, now you have the opportunity to do just that by joining The Shift community. You can go to steady.media/The Shift and become a member of The Shift. In return for supporting the podcast, you'll receive exclusive weekly newsletters, community membership, and plenty of other perks aimed at bringing us all closer together. That's steady.media/The Shift. Hello and welcome to The Shift, the podcast that aims to tell the no-holds-barred truth about being a woman post-40, created and hosted by me, writer and broadcaster, Sam Baker. By her own admission, today's guest, award-winning journalist Pawna Bell, wasn't looking forward to 40. She feared, as society had taught her, that it might be the beginning of the end, and so she set out to prove herself wrong. Pawna has written two memoirs about grief and mental health in the wake of her husband Rob's death by suicide, and followed those up with Stronger, an inspiring re-evaluation of women's strength, interwoven with her own discovery of powerlifting. I kid you not. It's no surprise that Pawna has become an advocate for diversity, mental health, and body image. Now she's turned her hand to fiction. Her debut novel, In Case of Emergency, is a warm, funny, immensely entertaining story of friendship, sisterhood, being single in a couple's world and a brown woman in a white world.
Working out what my core beliefs were, what my expectations were, really, really helped to weed out the people that I just don't want to bother with or give the time of day to. And then that then frees up time to actually spend time talking to people that I do want to, you know, possibly go out on a date with or spend more time with.
Pawna joined me to talk about taking back power, why she's all in favour of marriage but has absolutely no plans to do it again, her search for midlife role models as a brown woman, and embracing her 40-something goddess. Well, thank you for coming on The Shift, Pawna. It's lovely to have you. First of all, congratulations on Stronger winning a sports book award.
I am still in absolute shock about that. I can't believe it, but thank you very much for that.
Did you think of it as a sports book?
No, not at all. And I mean, I don't think of myself as a sporty person because pretty much for 80% of my life, I wasn't a sporty person. But also winning that award, it was really slim odds because number one, you're dealing with the fact that, you know, I'm not a professional sports person and a lot of the people nominated for those awards are. But also it is overwhelmingly male dominated. So as a non-sporty person, in her early 40s, winning a sports award, I did not expect that at all.
I mean, when I saw you'd won, you know, my first thought was, firstly, congratulations. My second thought was, is it a sports book? And then my third thought was, wow, 41, female, not sporty, and brown.
Yeah.
Like, massive achievement.
Yeah. I think out of everything that I have ever won, this probably has been the thing that has meant the most because it was, in my mind anyway, the most difficult thing to have won for all of those reasons, you know, all of those intersections that you've just stated. So when they announced that it had won, I didn't have anything prepared. But the benefit of also being in your 40s is that you're a lot more confident and able to talk at length about things that you have no idea what you're talking about. So that definitely held me in good stead had I won it earlier on in my life, perhaps.
Yeah, loads of experience of standing on the stage burbling, which you never do, actually. You never burble, ever. Since we've kind of started on that route about where you are now, let's start there and then go backwards. So when I read Stronger, you and I have talked about this before, there was just a tiny kind of throwaway phrase about how you were slightly dreading being 40. So tell me about that, about what you were dreading and why, and about the massive change in that attitude that we've seen over the last year, 18 months.
So from memory, I think that line may have been in the chapter where I was talking about menopause and definitely, you know, older women mm-hmm. engaging in sport and physical activity of whatever description. So I'm not talking about necessarily even sports, you know, this is just moving your body in some way. And it was really, really important to include those chapters in the book because I had felt that the idea of what you do with your body and what your body is capable of is just not roadmapped for older women in any shape or form. You know, if you go to your local news agent and you try and see people who represent you in your age demographic in mainstream women's fitness magazines, we're just not there. So for me, when I was approaching 40, the only kind of, I would say, templates I had for what that looked like was my mother's generation, basically, you know, and I didn't necessarily really seek out older women on social media at that point. Also, because I feel like while we've seen, you know, a real burst of people coming through in the last like year or so, I definitely don't think that, you know, even as recently as, you know, 3-4 years ago, that was particularly present. And so because I didn't really know much about getting older beyond, you know, real horror stories that I'd heard about menopause, it just seemed like something to be feared. It seemed like something to, you know, dread. And also, the overwhelming message seemed to be that the older you get, the weaker you get. You know, that's it. It's sort of the beginning of the end, et cetera, et cetera. And so, for example, I do powerlifting, which is competitive weightlifting, and I do it at a very amateur level, you know. This isn't a humble brag, but in comparison to other people who do the sport, same sport as me, I'm really, really average. But what I saw there were older women. I saw women in their 50s, 60s, and 70s, and these are incredibly strong women. And also, I know that physically, at the age of 41 and a half, I am physically far stronger than I was in my 20s and my 30s. So it seemed to me that this idea, you know, what I had believed about getting older was wrong. And actually, it was ridiculously ageist. You know we live in a massively ageist society. And so I think for me, that was a really important part of figuring that out and confronting that fear and actually finding out that, you know, yes, of course, there are things that happen to you as you get older. But if you are armed with the knowledge of it, if you have a community of like-minded people that see it as liberation and growth, then that's something that can absolutely change how you view the future. And that definitely was something that had started happening with me. So even though I'm not going to lie, like in my 39th year, when I sort of thought about being 40, I just thought, oh, I really don't want to. And then I turned 40 and it was almost comedic how much better I just felt and how much, sounds really cheesy and I'm sort of cringing slightly, but I just felt more powerful and that there was some stuff that I could just let go of and put down. And I think because I'd expected it to happen gradually as it had done, you know, when I turned 30, because it took me a few years to acclimatize to being in my 30s. But this was ludicrous. It was overnight. And I just thought, oh my God, this is the start of an incredible decade. And I'm really looking forward to whatever comes down the line because I get to shape that and I get to make that, you know, everything good that I want it to look like. I can work towards making that happen for myself.
It's so weird, isn't it? Because we really lionize youth and it's like, oh, your 20s. But I don't think I've spoken to a single woman for this podcast or for anything else who has said, yeah, I'd love to go back. I would just want to be 25 again.
Yes.
I can't think of anything worse, but I don't think I've spoken to anyone who's been like, yeah, I want to be there.
Well, the only time I ever feel like that is when I have a hangover and I'm just like, oh, for the recovery times of my youth, you know, as you're sort of dealing with like a 2-3 day hangover. That is literally the only time in any other aspect of my life. I wouldn't go back if you paid me.
What's the right term for it? It's not weight training, is it? Is it power lifting? What's the right term for what you do?
So weight training is a type of sport, and within that you can have different types of lifting. And the sport that I do is powerlifting, which is one of several different types of strength sports.
Do you think you'd be feeling the way you feel about being in your 40s if you didn't do that?
No, I mean, unequivocally, no. Because I think that what powerlifting has given me, which is much bigger than just physical strength, is that it has played a massive, massive part in liberating me from what I call the hamster wheel of constantly working towards trying to be as slim as possible. And I think that if I hadn't discovered powerlifting, and you know, for anyone who doesn't know why or what it is or whatever, it's essentially you're lifting the heaviest weights that your body can possibly manage. And it's a very slow, very technical sport. So, you know, there's sort of no rushing about with it, and it's very methodical. But in order to do it, you have to eat properly, you have to prioritize your sleep, and every other part of your life has to kind of fall in place around it. And if it doesn't, you're just not going to be able to perform well or do well. And you know, for me, that's a really important thing in terms of just working towards a goal that makes me feel good about myself. And I think if I hadn't discovered powerlifting, I would still be doing the same thing, which is, you know, worrying about how much food I was eating. You know, I need to go to the gym to work off X, Y, and Z. And I think I would still probably feel insecure and dissatisfied about my body. And when I think about how I used to feel about my body, I'm not saying that it's perfect, Sam, and I'm not saying that I don't have days when, you know, I fret or I worry. Of course I do. You know, it's impossible if you live in society to completely extract yourself from that. But I'm a lot more sane around that kind of stuff than I feel I used to be. And it's not something that negatively impacts how I think and feel about myself in the way that it used to in my 30s. I feel very, very liberated from that. And I'm very thankful for that.
Do you think there's an element to which it has kind of given you a sense of your body's purpose? When we're young, it's like, this is massively generalizing, but I'm just going to massively generalize here. It's like your body's purpose is to be hot, and then it's to have babies, and then nothing. And then there's, like you say, you can't see any examples of how to be, except for maybe very much older women. And I just wonder whether that strength and building the strength in your body, whether it gave you a purpose that you might not otherwise have had for your body.
Okay, I'm going to answer how I think.
Yeah, one of us is coherent here.
Yeah. So I would say that one of the things it did wasn't so much a message of love your body, because that's a very difficult thing to do day in and day out. What it did was it made me feel neutral about my body and understand my body. And effectively, what that does is it just connects all of those dots. And by that, I mean that you start to see your body as something that you need to look after and be kind to. Because when we think about getting older, I don't know that a lot of us, especially as women, because of that pervasive pressure of needing to look, quote marks, hot, or, you know, needing to look as youthful as possible, I feel that it is a massive distraction from, sure, the patriarchy, from various other areas of society, from what's really important. And what's really important is for women to be kind to their bodies, to nurture them, to stave off things like osteoporosis, to look after things like our bone density and our joint movements and all of that stuff, or even to just move our bodies in a way that makes us feel mentally good, that isn't anchored to a goal around aesthetics, which is literally the reason why I would say, for example, I would never want to go back to my 20s, is that seemed to be the overriding goal. And I mean, I understand why we feel like that, but I just don't think it actually creates anything useful. And it certainly doesn't create lifelong habits, you know, that are going to help us as we get older. So I have definitely started to think about my body in a different way, which is not to say that I don't think about aesthetics. And it's not to say that, you know, of course, like, I want to look after myself and present myself in a way that I feel is attractive. But that's not the most important thing. Like, you know, it's kind of nuts that we give more thought, for example, to what we're going to do with our pensions than we do with what our bodies are going to be like, you know, when we're in our 60s and 70s. And I'm not saying that one is more important than the other. I'm just saying that some things have equal importance. And for me, the distinction has been that it's not sort of exchanging one for the other. These things can all coexist at the same time. But it is really important for me to think about body health and, you know, habits that I'm doing. And again, that comes down to things like, I don't know, how much alcohol I drink or how much sleep I'm getting, because all of this stuff adds up the older I get in terms of when stuff will start to go wrong and maybe like how I recover from that. And that's definitely something I've become a lot more aware of the older I've gotten.
I've seen you describe getting older as your superpower.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it is in some ways, you know, obviously things can get more complicated, whether that's, you know, health wise or any other aspect of your life. But I feel that getting older has clarified things for me in a way that nothing else has. And I know that, you know, of course, I'm not the first person to have discovered this, but the clarity that it has given me around the things that I want to work towards, the people that I want in my life, it feels like a fog that has just cleared. And I think that the sort of the confidence that I feel as an older woman is, in my life anyway, unprecedented. I've never really felt like this. And the reason why I'm so grateful and why I describe it as a superpower is because it persists despite everything else in society telling me that older women are redundant.
Yeah, it's exactly that, isn't it? It's like all the forces around you are dismissing you. I mean, I wish I'd got there when I was 41, but I certainly feel like that now, which is just like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Take it or leave it.
Yeah.
You've always been quite together like that. I know you're like laughing now, like rocking. In fact, rocking and laughing. I think I know that from the inside that's different. But from outside, you seem to have been very good at going, okay, these are the things that I need to put in place to feel how I want to feel or be how I want to be. And I don't mean in a like a 5-year plan work thing. I mean in a, I suppose, mental health way.
That is incredibly kind of you. And yes, I am rocking with laughter because that's not how I necessarily always feel inside. But I think that it's just about boundaries, and boundaries used to be something that I was incredibly bad at doing. And, you know, like a lot of people who are reformed people pleasers, it takes a lot of work, I think, to get to that point. But I think it's just a realization that you could follow every single rule and you could check every single box and the house is still always going to win. It's not going to be you. Do you know what I mean? So you have to kind of extricate yourself from that and figure out what is it that you specifically need in your life. And that will be very different to what it is for me and other people in your life and so on. And just sticking to that, but also knowing that in 5 or 10 years' time, that might change completely. And that's perfectly okay. Like all you can do is deal with what's in front of you and try and make your reality around you as close an approximation to what makes you and your loved ones happy. And that's, I think, just sort of how I've tried to operate in the last few years, because anything else is exhausting. And I've just learned the hard way that you can try and do everything right and it's still either not enough for other people who set those expectations for you, and they don't have the right to set those expectations for you anyway.
One of the themes that's in the novel, and I can't decide whether it's best to ask you, maybe if before I start asking you about the theme, which ties into what you've just said, maybe if you just tell us a little bit about Balcomar and what kind of made you decide, actually, I'm going to write fiction now, after you've written 3 incredibly successful memoir issues.
So my debut fiction, which is called In Case of Emergency, I think I could have only written this in my 40s. And the reason why I say that is because I started many awful, terrible manuscripts in my 20s. And every single time I started something like that, it was, how can I write this in a way that will make everyone marvel at how clever I am and how out of the box I can think. And they were terrible because I was writing a book that was, you know, actually a vanity project. And it wasn't about the book. It wasn't about a narrative. It was more about me wanting validation from other people. And this specific book was when I had just arrived at a resting place, is how I would describe it, where I just thought, actually, I just want to write a book that I would want to read. And, you know, rather than beating myself up about writing, let's say, a literary book, I just want to write a book that someone will take on holiday and enjoy, or be able to read it at night. And I know, because I have these books on my bedside, that I just want this person to go to bed and just race to their bed because they want to just get stuck into that book. And I wanted it to be funny. I wanted it to be poignant. And I wanted the protagonist to be someone who reflected people like me, people like my friends, who are very rarely, for example, depicted on TV. Because when you usually see South Asian women, particularly older South Asian women, you know, we have this like yoke of oppression around us, and everyone is telling us and defining who we are. And that has changed. You know, there has been some incredible TV shows like We Are Lady Parts, Never Have I Ever, and so on. And there are some amazing modern women's fiction authors who are out there at the moment who are just sort of starting out. But I wanted to write a book about a woman in her late 30s who just didn't have everything figured out. Came from a South Asian family who, again, also were unlike South Asian families that I've seen depicted on TV, which usually tend to be super conservative, quite stern, and so on, which, again, is not my own life experience of things. But I wanted this woman to go through an experience, and this isn't a spoiler because it's on the book jacket cover.
Yeah.
But basically,
it's the first chapter, you're fine.
Yeah, she is, you know, she's at the top of her game in her career. She's sort of got this high-flying job, and she's you know, going through a bit of a time at work, and then basically is texting on her phone while she's storming down the street and falls into the open mouth of a beer cellar and kind of like ends up waking up in hospital, you know. And by luck, she hasn't got any major injuries, but what's happened is the hospital have called her emergency contact, and she sort of wakes up and sees that it's, you know, her like ex-boyfriend who she forgot that she put down as an emergency contact standing at the foot of her bed. And it prompts this whole reckoning of, you know, why is there no one in her life that she feels that she can rely on? Why has she sort of insulated herself in that way? Who are the people that matter? But also redefining her relationships with her family and understanding that just because you have a memory of your family history doesn't make it fact. And everyone has, you know, their own history that they've cobbled together from their own perspective, and how actually sometimes having conversations around that stuff is really important to figuring things out. And as a protagonist, she can be a little bit frustrating. You know, she wasn't supposed to be absolutely likable. And there are definitely some moments where you just might be like, oh my God, like, why are you making the same mistakes all over again? I wanted her to be flawed. I wanted her to be self-deprecating. And essentially, I also wanted her to just examine those big life goals and expectations, like getting married and having kids, and for that to not have to be the backbone of a narrative around a woman in her late 30s. And they're just incidental things that actually really what's at the heart of the book is figuring out the stuff that's really important to you and making decisions that are right for you versus what the status quo is telling you to do. But I also wanted to write a book that would just make people laugh. And I've been told that it does do that.
So. Yeah, it does. It really does. Before we came on, I was thinking if I had picked it up at the airport on the way on holiday and then read it on the Sun Lounger, I would be very, very happy. Honestly, it's like a very, very satisfying Sun Lounger read.
Thank you.
So make sure they've got a big pile at Gatwick.
Yeah, I hope so. But also make sure you keep your copy and tell other people to buy it.
Yeah, don't leave it in the hotel library. Don't share it.
Yeah.
But before I took it off another direction, I love you for bringing it back to kind of where I was going to come in before you explained the story behind In Case of Emergency, because what I thought was really interesting, it's not in any way the most dominant theme, but a kind of theme that threads all the way through it is about unlearning that learnt behaviour that we acquire from all kinds of different backgrounds in our childhood. You know, like there's a bit quite near the beginning where you talk about that kind of going home to see her parents and how everybody turns back into a 15-year-old and starts squabbling with their siblings the minute they go back home. But I kind of had this vision of little Belle, kind of quite self-sufficient, like a bit on her own. And that always, like you saw talking about people pleasing earlier, like the kind of learning to not make a fuss and get on with it and, you know, all of those things that are about managing other people's reactions almost. And you kind of, you rationalize it to yourself if you think about it at all, in as much as it's like, oh, I'm doing this to make their life easier so they won't worry. But as you said, it's, you don't want to be concerned about their concern.
Yeah. So I think that's a very perceptive take on her. I would say that also she doesn't understand that you can't compartmentalize your life like that. And actually, even though you may do things in a way, or she behaves in a way, you know, to make life, quote marks, easier, because she just thinks, well, if she doesn't tell her parents about what's going on in her life, or even, you know, tells her older sister about what's going on in her life, then it's fine, because, you know, then she won't get hassled by her family and, you know, they won't sort of ask all of these follow-up questions and so on. But in doing so, she misses the point entirely, which is that, yes, in some ways you may be removing, you know, hassle from your life, but you also miss out on all of the other amazing things that comes from having, you know, strong relationships and connections with people, which is essentially people being there for you and supporting you when you really need it. And I think that, you know, the crux of this book, really, what it starts off with is that catalyst of that accident making you realize that you do need support and, you know, no one lives and exists as an island, and actually asking for help and support isn't necessarily a weakness. And that's definitely something that I think women, particularly older women, struggle with, you know, especially after I think you get towards your late 30s and early 40s, of just feeling as if you should be able to deal with it all on your own. And that can be, I think, an incredibly lonely place to be if, you know, you're sort of at a point where you don't have your phone a friend or the person that you would immediately call if something goes badly. And I was just quite interested in exploring the kind of lonely reality for that, because also I just think a lot of people actually do struggle with it and do struggle with, you know, not necessarily being able to make friends, you know, the older you get, or feeling as if the last set of friends that you had, you know, whether that's your university friends or work colleagues or whatever it is, just might not come round again, and almost giving up on that part of yourself. So that was definitely something I wanted to explore in it.
Yeah, it's really interesting, because it's something that I've been talking about with the women who are members of the Shift. It's that kind of almost the pressure around friendship. I mean, friendship is, it's a big theme, but it is something that Belle struggles with. But the number of those women who kind of said, I feel like I'm maybe almost a failure if I haven't got this great big girl gang. And how do you make new friends if you're in midlife and you have, like we both have, an at-home job and you don't have a school gate scenario? How do you go about making friends and nurturing those? And I think there's an assumption that it's something you just know how to do. And somebody's actually said that to me, but you just know how to do it. And it made me think, well, I didn't just know how to do it. I mean,
well, also,
did you just know?
No, because I mean, the thing is, if you look at it from, you know, let's say a behavioral science point of view, you don't just know. You make friends at those very pivotal moments in your life, in school, at university, because of circumstance, because you all happen to be in the same place. Well, you know, for example, when you make friends with your work colleagues, and when you no longer have that as a structure, and when some of those relationships just haven't, you know, worked out or stood the test of time, you have to sort of learn how to almost engage a muscle that you've never really had to use before. Because yes, okay, obviously there are different personality types and some people find it easier to make friends than others. But I would still say, you know, when you look at everything on balance, the quantity of friends says nothing about a person versus the quality of friends who are actually there for you. And that is, I would say, even for the most gregarious person, that will still always be a very, very small number of people. The thing that I think changed for me personally, I can't speak for my protagonist because she basically takes the lazy way out and tries to old relationships with people. But I think definitely for me personally, it was realizing that making new friends is very much like dating, and that actually it requires an enormous amount of proactive effort, and it requires putting yourself out there and, you know, trying hobbies and and chatting to people, but also really knowing when to cut your losses, you know, in terms of, in the same way that you wouldn't go out on a date if someone said something extremely problematic that was at odds with, you know, your core belief system, that you don't ignore that when it comes to friendships. And I think that that is something that you get better and better at doing as you get older, but you still have to start somewhere first. And it's really intimidating when you start out.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So your friend dating and your dating and your self-dating, I saw on Instagram. Let's talk a bit about being single and I think the pressure not to be.
Okay, so the pressure to be single and the pressure not to be. Do you mean in terms of where my life is right now or just generally?
Obviously, I want you to talk about where your life is right now, but also generally, I think that there is, well, people conflate being in a couple and being married as well, which I feel very conscious of. But that sense that there's the social pressure, and then for your character and for you, maybe, there's also the pressure of your community of being a South Asian woman and what's expected of you or not expected of you, or what people think will be expected of you because you're a South Asian woman. How have you navigated that over the last few years?
So I would say that my experience differs from my protagonist because she doesn't have, you know, any deep trauma in her background. So she doesn't have, beyond the breaking of certain relationships, she doesn't have anything that was particularly, you know, too dark. So in terms of the pressure that she probably feels as a woman in her late 30s is probably a lot more intense because, you know, if you've never been married or if you've never really had significant relationships coming from the South Asian community, and I know this, you know, from looking at friends of mine and so on, that pressure can be quite intense depending on, you know, the type of family you come from and so on. And definitely it is viewed, regardless of your career success, as the dominant marker of success, if you're a man or a woman, if you come from the South Asian community. With regards to, I think, how Belle feels about that, the thing I really like about her is that she doesn't allow that pressure to crush her too much, maybe because she, you know, has been sort of quite distanced from her family for quite a while. But I think she just decides to do what she wants to do when she does it and doesn't necessarily think, you know, whether or not it's going to disappoint her parents, which I really admire. And I wish I could be like that, to be quite frank. But in terms of my own personal life, you know, my story is very different. And Rob passed away in 2015, which was devastating for so many reasons. But I think that when it comes to, you know, he passed away 7 years ago, and I can't even believe that it's been 7 years as I sort of say this. But I think my viewpoint on, you know, how you recover from something like that and your capacity to be in relationships and to be single and or not single or whatever it is. I mean, that, Sam, has been a real, for want of a better word, journey, because it's been very, very up and down. And I think that, you know, I started dating about a couple of years after he passed away, but I didn't put any pressure on myself as to what, you know, there wasn't supposed to be an end point. I just sort of thought, you know, okay, I'm dating, like, this is literally all I'm capable of doing, and I'm not going to overthink it. Now, yes, there is this sort of subtle pressure that you feel from other people when you talk about, let's say, you know, even casual dates, where people just get very excited about it on your behalf. And they say things like, oh, you know, I'm sure that you're going to meet someone special and so on. And I understand that the intention of it is good. And I know that regardless of how emancipated you might think you are from, you know, the romantic storyline, when you hear that someone who has gone through a very tough time has started dating again, you get very hopeful on their behalf. And I could feel that hope when I would talk to them. But for me, that just wasn't important. It was just important to figure things out. And also, you know, as someone who has been very vocal when it comes to things like suicide prevention and mental health and so on, I'm very Googleable, right? And if you are who is about to go on a date with me, or you've gone on a date with me and then you Google me, there is, I completely understand why people get freaked out, especially, you know, in sort of the early years of this. And I think I just felt very uncertain about, well, what do I do with that? And, but at the same time, I just thought, well, I'm not going to apologize for the work that I'm doing. And, you know, this is who I am. So you kind of have to take it or leave it. And I think that I'm a fairly, you know, well put together person. And I'm pretty honest with people about how I feel about things. And now that the way I look at things is definitely in the last couple of years, and I would say the pandemic has had a massively important role to play in this, is that it has really clarified what it is that I actually want from dating and where I see my life going. And again, this might change, so, you know, need to put that out there. But dating was making me really unhappy, because in the back of my mind, I thought that it needed to have an end point. The end point being that you meet someone that you settle down with and get into a relationship with, and it's serious, et cetera, et cetera. And pandemic gave me a lot of time to think, as it did a lot of people. And I realized I just don't want that. I don't want the relationship escalator. I don't want to have to date someone and think about the next steps that have to take place in order for me to tick those boxes, to show everyone that I'm okay, and that, you know, Rob's death didn't break me. Rob's death changed me in some, you know, not so great ways. It changed me in terms of I don't want to say positive, because I obviously don't wish in a million years that it ever happened, but I had to learn how to grow very quickly from his death. And one of the things that has come as a result of that has been, I think, realizing that actually, you know, as much as I loved him, as much as I'm not closing myself off to the idea of loving someone else, I don't know that I ever want to get remarried again. And I don't know that I ever want to fuse my life together with someone. It doesn't mean that I can't share my life with someone. I just think that, personally speaking, I have broadened my horizons around what a loving relationship looks like. But also, most importantly, is that I think that the type of connection that you have with someone depends on the other person. I think that it's a very tricky thing to go into dating, you know, for me anyway, expecting there to have a very specific outcome. And I think that's what was making me unhappy, because deep down I knew that I didn't necessarily want this like big, heavy, full-on relationship. But I also knew that I wanted to kind of date and have fun and keep that door open for that significant someone. I'm burbling now. I'm definitely burbling. But I feel like 100% being in my 40s is that I know that dating can be difficult. But I also know that I have simplified it for myself by being very, very clear about what I want from it. And at the same time, weaving in the flexibility flexibility to accommodate and allow for someone who makes me happy or excites me or who I want to spend time with.
I think that's so interesting because once you start to think about it, it's so goal-oriented, isn't it, dating? It's like, and the idea that that's not how you want your life to be, that, yeah, you want other people in it, but that's like, you're not dating so you'll meet someone, so you'll move in with them, so you'll marry them or whatever. It's just another social thing that you do.
And you don't feel what I don't feel. I don't feel that I have to contort myself into a shape or a personality that is appeasing to other people as a consequence of it. It doesn't mean that I can't compromise. It doesn't mean that I don't, have a discussion with the other person around things. But it just means that, you know, I know my own mind around things. So for example, one of the things that I put in my dating profile is that whatever the interaction is, that respect is a really important part for me. And before, I never would have put something like that in my dating profile because, you know, you think, oh my God, well, what if that like freaks the other person out or it scares them off? But shouldn't respect be a fundamental basis of how you talk to each other on a dating app? And yet very often that doesn't always seem to be the case. So I just feel like working out what my core beliefs were, what my expectations were, really, really helped to weed out the people that I just don't want to bother with or give the time of day to. And then that then frees up time to actually spend time talking to people that I do want to, you know, possibly go out on a date with or spend more time with.
Have the people around you, you know, your family, have they struggled with that?
I think that my parents, my mum for sure, I know, would love it if I got remarried. Because I think for her, that's something that she's of a particular generation. And I think that that would be something that she would love to see. But I have just been honest about it. And I've just said, look, you know, I'm not sort of sitting there in my nunnery. Like I am dating. And sometimes I date a few people at the same time. I just said, I just don't see that as being the most important part of my life. And if that changes, then it changes and fine. But I just said at the moment, I really like the way my life is going. And so I said, I know it's difficult for you to understand, but hopefully you'll be able to understand that what I'm doing at the moment makes me really happy. And that, you know, I have a very, very strong support network in terms of friends and family. I don't know if, you know, if everyone gets that. I think that there will always be, you know, a certain contingent of people who will be wondering whether or not I'm actually being honest with myself. But I'm the one that has to live my life and share my life with other people. So, you know, only I can really be the judge of that.
And what about the kid thing?
The kid thing is not a sad thing for me, actually. In fact, I did think I would have kids. And I definitely think that I thought I would have kids with Rob. And then after that, I'm not saying that I completely let that go, but I was also not sure about it. And I think that when I then turned 40, I just thought, actually, no, as in it was a definitive no. Because I think, Sam, if I wanted kids, I'm sure you'd be able to tell. I'm very bloody minded and I would.
We'd all know.
I mean, I don't need a partner to achieve something like that with. And I would absolutely do that. And I haven't completely shut the door on like caretaking in some way, maybe when I get older, you know, and being able to share my life with or make someone else's life better as a consequence. But I think it was quite a definitive thing where I turned 40 and I just thought, actually, no, it's a no, because it's not a sad thing for me because I've never been ridiculously maternal and I've never really, even though I thought, oh, yeah, of course, like Rob and I would have kids, you know, that's what married people do. I don't know how to explain it in any other way other than like I know the distinction between friends of mine that have always wanted children and that it's been a consuming, you know, thought. Mm. And that just that wasn't me. So when I kind of made that decision and I thought, actually, I don't know that I will be able to raise another human being. I don't know that I feel generous enough with my life to be able to do so. There are all these other things that I want to do with my life that I would not be able to do if I had a child. And also for every single person that says, well, you might regret not having kids. I just thought, well, wouldn't the reverse be absolutely awful? Like what would happen if I had a child and I regretted that, you know, I think, again, it's a getting older thing. You just see a wider range of outcomes taking place the older people get. And so what seems like, you know, this is going to sound so cynical, but, you know, when you're in your 30s and everyone's getting married and they're starting to have kids, you can't see that. All you can see is this mad rush for everyone's lives are changing and the rebirth of something new. And then when people have sort of like been doing it for a while and you see the problems that kind of come up, I think for me, it's just a leveler. It just reminds me that life is not fixed and it's not made more simple because you're married or because you have children. It's just complicated in a different way. And I think that since I made that decision to not have children, it has made me so much more loving and empathetic and generous towards the other children in my life, you know, my nieces and nephews, my friends' children. But it has also meant that I am able to support specifically the mothers in my life in a much more generous way than I probably felt before. Because I think before, when I was uncertain, I felt like something had been taken from me, or I was sort of knocked off this path, you know, after Rob passed away, and I didn't know how to make my peace with that. And I feel like I have made my peace with that, because I can't long for something that I'm not really sure I wanted in the first place.
You're really close to your niece, aren't you?
I am. She's incredible. I mean, I know everyone says that about, you know, their own nieces and nephews, but she's an incredible human being. And I definitely see myself as someone in her life that, you know, particularly the older she gets, that I want to be that support system for her, and also, you know, just give her as much love and support as she needs. Because I had aunts like that when I was growing up, and it was really important to be able to do that. And I want to be able to do that for her.
Yeah, to be that. I think there are some people, and I think I'm definitely one of these people, I am much better, I think, at being the other adult. I mean, in my case, it was a stepmom, but that kind of one you can go to and talk to who doesn't have the parental stuff, the ones who can, with a clear conscience, buy you junk food and take you to see inappropriate films and listen.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think also, particularly for, I would say, my sister, for my friends and so on, I think being able to offer them a space where they can also just be themselves and not have to think about being a parent, and to organize fun stuff for them to do, you know, without their kids. I think that that's a really important function. Also, just reminding them that there are other aspects to their identity, you know, not by telling them, God, no, you know, not by pointing it out, but just by inviting them along to things, you know, and including them in things. And I think that that's a really important, you know, part to play, because I can imagine how you need a wide variety of friends that exist beyond your own children. And I am very happy to be one of those people that can provide that.
Does the relationship between Belle and her sister in the book bear any resemblance to your relationship with your big sister, Priya?
No, because the relationship that Beryl has with her sister, they almost have to rebuild an entire relationship from scratch, because their lives sort of, you know, started going in different directions, because they've got a bit of a chunky age gap, you know, 6 years, which is a bit of a hard age gap to have, especially between sisters, because the older sibling always feels like a, you know, a bit of a parent. And they never managed to bridge that gap, or to talk about things or sort things out and so on. And so very much it is about, how do you create that relationship when both of you are such different people as you are as adults? Whereas my sister and I have been pretty inseparable, apart from, you know, when I was a teenager and she was a teenager, and you have sort of like growth periods and so on. But we've always had a very, very close relationship, and we pretty much voice note each other about 5 or 6 times a day. It's,
wow.
I know. Yeah. We call them podcasts, actually.
There probably is a podcast in them. Don't let your agent hear, or they'll be giving you another job. Before we go to the questions that I always ask at the end, I just want to ask you one more thing. We touched very briefly earlier on how there are a lot more women speaking out about menopause and midlife and invisibility and all those things. But it struck me, and I have done loads of panels, I've done corporate events, and it strikes me on nearly every occasion that everybody is white. So as a kind of a brown woman in her early 40s, other than being that role model yourself, which you are being, but you know, you can't be all of the things to all of the people, much as you're doing a really good job of that. Where are you getting your inspiration from? Where are you seeing your aging role models?
For me, Instagram is a massive part of that because you're absolutely right. And I would say that also it has to be said, most of the aging role models, you know, who are kind of put out there are not just white, but they're also extremely, extremely slim. So, yes, you know, yeah. When we think about things like body diversity, I feel like we've just got such a long way to go when it comes to older women. But Instagram is the leveler for me because it allows me to seek out communities who have just decided to create it for themselves, which, you know, a lot of Black and brown women have done because they just aren't necessarily given those opportunities by the existing power structures that be. So I would say that there are definitely a lot of people that I follow on Instagram. I think on my Instagram page, I've got a little highlights that says older women, and there are a fair few women that I've highlighted in there.
Is that the Poorna Bell Instagram?
Indeed. Yeah, it's Poorna Bell. So, and that is one of the things, you know, especially women of color for me, it's a demographic that I will always give space on my platform to because they're just so underrepresented everywhere else. And you're absolutely right. You know, when it comes to things like panel shows and even like ad campaigns and so on, it's like going back in time 10, 20 years ago, you know, when people just thought it was enough to get a woman on a panel. And it's just like, well, so they now think it's just enough to get an older woman. And then they don't consider the intersections around that, or, you know, no one really wants to do an extra little bit of work to figure out who those voices might be. And that's something that I sincerely hope changes, but definitely on Instagram is how I connect with all of these incredible women on there.
Brilliant. Thank you. Okay. I've asked these questions like 95 times. And I always have to look at them. It's just ridiculous. What's your emotional age?
I think it's 28, but I couldn't really tell you why. I think it's because even though I know maturity-wise I'm not 28, I feel like the spirit of being 28 was that I was old enough to know some things, but I also wanted to take chances with everything. And I think that's probably why that's what I feel like mentally. But then it depends on location. If I'm at my parents' house, then I feel 15. Yeah. Which is ludicrous.
I wonder if that will ever change. I wonder if you're like that until you're like 70 or however old it is before they're not there anymore.
I'm not sure because this is definitely something that I revisit in the fiction, which is where Belle like comes across, you know, people that she grew up with when she was 16, who she hasn't seen for years. And there are flashbacks to the 90s. And it's instantly that for her. It's instantly, you know, coming face to face with the boy that she would lurk in the bushes and kind of, you know, look out for. But I also think there's something incredibly magical about that, about a certain drawing together of experiences that just instantly time machine you into a particular way of thinking or a sort of a place in your life. And I really like that's able to still happen.
I loved all those old 90s goth moments. it was so happy making. And actually, this is something else I meant to ask. How did you come about rediscovering your inner goth at 40?
Oh, do you know what, Sam? I think it was around about the time I may have seen you last year and we were doing Cheltenham, right? That's a much bigger conversation. But I know that obviously a lot of people, especially when you hit your 40s, something kind of, I don't know, it's like this switch goes off around your sense of style and people just either don't know what to do or they think that they should be doing something and so on. And I think for me, I had seen a lot of friends and family members who, let's say now are in their mid to late 40s, who went really bold colors, you know, bright patterns and so on. And I just knew that's just not where I wanted my sense of style to go. And I just didn't want to do that.
I can't see you in that art teacher vibe.
I mean, I do it from time to time when I'm in the mood. But what I realized was actually there was a way of doing grown-up goth But now I actually had the money to buy myself decent clothes that weren't, you know, a tenner in Camden Market. And that was something, when I made that realization, I just thought, oh, there is a much more grown up way to do this. And by the way, I love dressing like this. So I really feel like I feel very comfortable and very powerful in what I wear.
And in a way, actually, it really does fit in with being older, because one of the things I certainly found in my late 40s and early 50s was that I could no longer wear crap, you know, that kind of, you need like a good cut and everything. So actually, if you're like, I don't know that your budget does stretch to this, but if you're like Rick Owens goth.
Oh my God. Okay.
If only. Or the Row. Heaven.
So yes, both of those brands, I am keeping my eye on. The budget does stretch to it, but maybe when they're in the sale, I think. Yeah. Also, I buy less now anyway. So it's less about volume and it's more about, you know, I know she's been on your podcast, but I found her advice so invaluable, Kat Farmer, talking about when you buy a piece of clothing, can you see it, I think, in three different ways or and so on. And I have actually, since listening to that, have applied that rule and it has dramatically cut down on impulse purchases. So, yeah.
Oh, that's good. Maybe I should pay attention to that. I read that on, and then she said it on the podcast and I remember thinking, yeah, but I wear everything with jeans anyway. So, yeah, of course it's going to go. Anyway, to get back to the point, give us a book recommendation.
Book recommendation, I would say The Elements, which is written by Kat Lister, which I think about that book almost every week. It is still one of the most beautiful books I have ever read. And it talks about Kat becoming a widow at the age of 36, I want to say, which resonates very strongly with me because I became a widow when I was 34 and I've never read anything quite like it. And even if it's not your personal experience, it is one of the most beautiful books I've ever read. And yeah, I just honestly, the passages that are highlighted in that, and the reason why that book is really special is because Kat anchors a lot of what she's going through to the most beautiful depictions of prose around landscape and atmosphere and things that just make us feel a lot bigger than ourselves.
Yeah, it's a beautiful book, isn't it? And she is an absolutely beautiful writer.
She is.
What advice would you give younger women?
I would say learn what to fight for and understand that some people have probably been fighting for it as well for quite a long time. But also learn what to let go of. And I know that that sounds like, you know, a really crappy Instagram quote, but distinguishing between those two things will save you a lot of time, but it will also clarify what to care about, I think. There were things that I didn't understand in my 20s that would affect me and people like me as I got older. And I just put up with things because I thought, you know, that's what you should do and you shouldn't complain. And I wish I'd been a lot more vocal about a lot of things. And I wish I'd let certain things go and not worried about the wrong type of things as well.
When did you learn what to let go and what to fight for?
I think that my late 30s is when I've always had that mentality of being someone who wants to write and fight for marginalized people. That has been something I've done since I was a baby journalist at the age of, you know, 23. But I would say the clarity around letting go of things definitely was my late 30s, and understanding that the things that I might get upset or angry about are not the things that are necessarily going to matter in a year, or are even going to be the things that I remember, and that actually learning how to just sort of let go of certain things and understanding that sometimes when someone's being a dick to you, it's not necessarily about you. It's just because they've got stuff going on in their lives, helps me to sort of, you know, not be so self-involved, and helps me to kind of understand that the world is actually pretty big and not everything is based around what I do or don't do.
I think that's a really big one, isn't it? Number of times I hear myself say it, like that kind of, what did I do to make that happen? And it's like, nothing.
Yeah.
There are other things going on in the world that don't involve you. It's crazy. Who's your old bird role model?
Ooh, can I choose two?
You can have as many as you want.
Okay. So because fitness is a very important part of my life, I would say Jacqueline, who runs the account on Instagram at Her Garden Gym. And she trains women who are in their 50s, 60s and beyond. Her outlook on how women should move their bodies, the anti-ageist work that she does,
yeah,
is incredible. I mean, every time she posts something, I'm just thinking, I'd like punch the air, you know, in a really cheesy way. And I'm like, oh my God, I wish everyone thought like this. But I would say that if we're looking at maybe celebrities, someone like Michelle Yeoh, I'm obsessed mm-hmm. with her because
she's brilliant.
She's brilliant, but also, I mean, I know this is such a naive thing to say because how can you ever really know a celebrity? She just seems like such a decent, warm and loving person as well. And, you know, advocates for so many other people as well in her own community. I absolutely love her. And her work seems to just keep getting better and better.
Yeah. Have you seen, and I'm not going to be able to remember the name of the movie now, Everything Everywhere. Yeah.
I am going, I'm taking myself on a self date, Sam, on Wednesday. And I'm going to be taking myself to see that.
Oh, I'm so rubbish at going to the cinema, but I just know it's something you need to see on a big screen as well.
Yeah.
What's your superpower?
I think my superpower is, I think it's actually the basic principle of Stronger, which is encouraging women to put down the narrative that is not helping them, that is holding them back. And for all of us, that's our, you know, inner voice sometimes. And to just be rebellious and to just go, no, I'm not doing that anymore. I don't want to be that person anymore because that's the person that everyone else wants me to be. And I'm going to take some time and figure out what it is that I actually do want. And everyone else kind of has to work around that. And that's okay, because I've worked around everyone else my entire life.
And I can now envisage thousands of women like taking off their headphones and going, right. And last one, how many fucks do you give?
I'd like to say no fucks, but the reality is I do have a few fucks to give, and I wish that I didn't. The fucks that I wish I could release are the ones around, I think, getting older and worrying about the invisibility that might come with that. You know, it's not pervasive, but it's there. And also worrying about just not being able to do the things that I want to do physically, whether that's, you know, weight training or running around and doing various things. But I'm working on both of those two things because I just don't think that there's any point in worrying about things that you have probably not very much control over.
Are you feeling any sense of encroaching invisibility?
No, but I think that that's maybe for a few reasons. And, you know, I would say that a big part of that is because I've inherited my mother's freakish genes, which, as has my sister, which means that from the sort of the side of things of visibly looking older, my mother has like a set of genes where she just doesn't look her age. You know, she looks a lot younger than she is. And so there's a part of me that just thinks that, you know, I come from a very privileged point of view because that encroaching sense of invisibility and the kind of prejudice towards older women, I don't think I've felt the full brunt of that yet. And I think it's probably lying in wait for me. But the fact is that I want to get to the place where I just don't give a shit whether or not it is.
You will. And if anything, I would say, whether it means anything or not, I would say you're more visible than ever.
Oh, thanks. Is this something very loud on Instagram?
No.
Thank you.
In a good way.
Thank you.
Thank you, Poorna. It's absolutely lovely to talk to you. Lovely to see you.
Yeah.
After all this time.
It has been an absolute pleasure. I'm obsessed with your podcast, so I'm very happy that I made it.
Thank you for listening. You can hear a new episode of The Shift each Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts. If you like what you hear, please do rate, review and follow, because it really does help other people find us. And if you'd like to support The Shift further, please consider becoming a member of our community. Find out more at steady.media/theshift.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.